Hey, good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. How you doing today? This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, which, as you know, is now part of the American Consortium for Equity in Education, our group, over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. Again, the American Consortium for Equity in Education. Go over there, learn what we're doing all about equity, and join with us if you're in education. It's free. Okay, it's an industry-supported consortium. We thank every industry member who does just that. All right, and when you go over to ace-ed.org, you'll see our magazine, which is called, it's an online journal called Equity and Access. These are the last days that the November-December issue will be up there. January-February comes out this week. All right, and so, of course, we have archived issues over there. But please, you'll be able to check it all out as you go through today. By the way, it's January 26th, okay, 2021. And you'll see an icon there for podcasts, and it's where we have our schedule and all of the podcasts. So please check it out. Check out the archives, etc. Join with us at ace-ed.org. Today we're going to be talking to our good friends over at the National Association for Gifted Children, NAGC, talk about the current state of gifted education. We have a new report to talk about. Their president, Jonathan Plucker, from Johns Hopkins, was supposed to be with us, but he had to bag out. He has got some other things he had to do, and that's okay, Jonathan. We love you. We love it when you write for our magazine. But with him, and they are still here, is Jared Hodges. Dr. Hodges is from the University of North Texas. Hi, Jared.
How are you doing?
I'm fine. It's Larry Jacobs here. Call me Larry, please. I think I forgot to say that at the beginning of the show. I'm Larry Jacobs, right? There you go. Okay, Jared, it's a pleasure to have you here. Where is University of North Texas? Is that Dallas?
That's exactly right. We're located in North DFW metro area in Denton, Texas. So the Denton part of the Dallas-Fort Worth area.
The Denton part of – and are you a Cowboys fan?
Right.
Because if yes, we have – oh, I'm sorry. Then we have to end this interview and just go right over to William Knutson. Sorry. I'm sorry about that. No, just kidding. Just kidding. Welcome here, Jared.
Yes, unfortunately, okay. I'm a Cowboys fan.
And how long has this disease happened? Are you wearing a mask because of that or anything like that?
No, it's happened ever since watching Emmitt Smith, Troy Aikman, when I was young in junior high, winning Super Bowls. And, you know, I've been suffering through that pain ever since.
Yeah, I'm from Philadelphia, and you know how we feel about each other, don't you?
So, right.
Yeah, what can I tell you? You know, you're welcome here, my friend. Okay, you're welcome here, and I hope your disease is not infectious. Okay, so there you go. William Knutson, Bill, are you there?
Yes, good to be with you, Larry. And I share love for Cowboys being a 49er fan, so I remember the glory.
See, I can handle the 49ers. I like the 49ers. I'm ecumenical, you know. And I live in Maine now, so I've always been a Patriots fan for the last 30 years. It's those darn Cowboys, okay? Are you in Washington, Bill?
I am. If you don't mind me asking, I know we're here to talk about education, but how do you feel about Tampa Bay? Are you allowed to root for Tampa Bay, or is that against the rules in New England?
Actually, most of New England is rooting for Tampa Bay. Okay, we've always had a love affair with Tom Brady, and nobody blames Tom Brady, who I know everybody else in the world hates. Nobody blames Tom Brady for leaving. We consider it the fault of Belichick and Bob Kraft. So, we New England now has two teams to root for, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the New England Patriots. And considering the Patriots this year, we're all suddenly Tampa Bay fans. So, there you go, in a nutshell. Okay, so we were very happy about this. It's really cool. And you're Director of Government and Affiliate Relations. I guess that's all the state associations over at NAGC, right?
Yes, absolutely. And I helped manage the report, even though Jared and his team, they actually did the hard writing and the research. But, yes, I do work with affiliates, do our policy work, among a few other things.
Yeah, and that's cool. And, Jared, obviously you're a professor of education, particularly an expert in gifted education, right?
That's correct. That's exactly correct. Here at UNT, we house Texas's Office of Gifted and Talented Research and Education. So we're pretty steeped here in UNT in giftedness and gifted education within the department.
And this is actually a good question. You're a professor of education. What interested you, particularly you, in gifted education?
My big area of interest in gifted education, when I was working in K-12, there was a situation where my school district was forced to widen widen its identification criteria for gifted education within the district. This led to a lot of parent angst, a lot of parents saying that the program was being diluted. I wasn't in gifted education at the time, or wasn't in within K-12. I was in special education, the other side of the spectrum. But this gave me a lot of interest in gifted education and wondering what's going on, you know, what's going on in there, that having more children come into gifted education caused a number of other parents to be so upset about that. So that piqued my interest quite a bit and kind of opened the door for me to look into gifted ed.
That's really cool. And since I'm on the subject of that, you brought it up, what was the end result of that? Was the school district right or wrong to expand it? Do you know?
The school district was right. The school district was a smaller district that served a large portion of Latinx students. And so they wanted their gifted ed program to be more reflective of the district.
Nice.
And it did.
That's good. And I know, by the way, and Bill, you can talk about this, there's an equity move. We're going to talk about the report in a second, but there's a big equity move within NAGC to, if I may, like Jarrett just said, to make sure the kids that all kids who need it are given the gifted education they need. You want to comment on that, Bill?
No, absolutely. And that was one of the exciting things from this, the State of the States report, which Jarrett and his team did the yeoman's work.
He mentioned that. We're going to get into it, but I'm just curious about the equity side. Yeah.
Yeah, no, and equity, I guess that's what I was kind of looping into, the latest data on equity. A lot of states are kind of moving forward in equity and kind of tackling those issues. I know Oklahoma, New Jersey, Massachusetts, they're kind of moving forward. So there's been a lot of positive work on equity. And at the federal level, just a few months ago, in the summertime, Cory Booker, senator from New Jersey, introduced with a few other Advanced Coursework Equity Act, which is the first kind of new piece of legislation in several years that really focused on the nexus between gifted and equity. So there's a lot of positive movement on those issues.
And did that pass, that piece of legislation?
No, it was introduced in August. So we're one of the big things we're trying to push for this Congress is the Advanced Coursework Equity Act. So hopefully with a new administration, a new Congress, we'll have more increase our chances for positive results.
Yeah, leave us hope so. Regardless of the political side, the Congress has been a little bit lax in legislation, which is their job. Okay?
Yes.
It would be like bus drivers getting in the seat of the bus and then deciding not to pick up passengers. Okay? But it's just ridiculous. Okay? So I'm glad to hear. That's why I asked that question, because I'm fed up with the Senate the House as well, not legislating. They are not political places. They are legislative places. They seem to have forgotten that. That's my rant for today, gentlemen, and people in the audience. We'll just go into that. The new report. Okay, Jarrett, were you running that report?
excuse me. Yes.
You can
this
say
was
yes.
Us,
you
as
can
far
say
as the
yes.
report.
Yeah.
Yes, we did. I did run the report.
Good. Yeah. Who'd you ask? What were the questions? What'd you ask?
So the big focus of the report is getting all 50 states, as well as D.C.'s Department of Education, and kind of asking them about their gifted education policies and programs, like what are some of the – how many students are identified as gifted, how many teachers, kind of the nuts and bolts kind of side, but also questions that dealt with, like, what are they doing in their state? What are their focuses on equity? What kind of policies are they putting forth? What support do they have for educators within the state? So there was both in the report kind of a nuts and bolts, like numbers side of the report, but also a policy side where NAGC and us at UNT wanted to get an overall picture where we can kind of get an idea of what is gifted education in the United States right now.
And so let me ask the leading question. What is gifted education in the United States right now? What do we know?
Depends on the state. That's the best. That's the best overall idea.
That's an interesting answer right there. All right, I'm going to ask. Give me one of the top states that comes to mind. Give me that. One of the better states in gifted.
Oh, that's a dangerous question to ask. What are better?
No, it's all right. One of the better ones. It's a more generic thing. I didn't ask you for the best. Which one is one of the better ones?
Well, I'll be a little biased here, just ever so slightly, having been in K-12 in Texas, currently being a professor here in Texas, with some ever and a deep love of the Cowboys. Texas is usually a, you know, considered one of these model states that are going
there
on.
Go.
Texas has had a really strong gifted education program. It serves about 11 to 12% of the total gifted population, identified gifted population in the U.S. It's usually considered a strong candidate for where other states might try to model. Now, gifted ed is on a bit of a backswing in Texas, where there's been some pullback away from it. But even with that bit of pullback, you still have a lot of issues where other states might model from it. Another state that's really on top of its game is
Washington.
I got him
going now,
state.
Bill. I got him going. See that? I got him going here.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
This is good.
Eric, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Washington State is another one. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, Jared, go. You're the expert.
You
I was going to joke with
go.
You that. Go.
Oh, the context of the backswing in Texas? Or, there's been a little bit of a pullback on how gifted education is funding in Texas, and there's been some push. And the idea in Texas, the pushback against it has been equity-related, that there's gifted education in Texas isn't as equitable as it could be.
Wow.
So the legislators are asking themselves, why, if this is causing us so many equity issues and this is the system of inequity, why are we supporting it? But there's still a lot of people in Texas who are pushing towards equity, who feel that gifted education can be a vehicle towards greater equity.
Mm-hmm.
So you have that side.
I love it.
On the other hand, in the complete opposite of an upswing is Washington State, where you have this big movement towards reinforcing gifted education. You were recently, as part of some of the change in policy, you had gifted education being put as a basic right. So it was a basic educational right within the state.
In Washington State.
In Washington, yes, in Washington State. So that's a little bit of a difference. And in Washington State, the other is you have a big push to get the rural side of the state. You know, the state, the rest of
that's
the state
equity
is not
side.
Seattle.
That's the equity side, yeah. That's the equity side,
right.
Yeah.
So that's one of the interesting ways is to look at across the United States. When you look at state to state to state, there's an overall trend towards equity within the states,
mm-hmm.
across all states. But within certain states, there's backswings away from gifted education, and there's other states who are seeing it as towards gifted education. Like gifted education can be a vehicle towards equity versus gifted education might be an impediment towards equity as viewed by certain legislators within the state. But as far as the practitioner and the educators, all of them view and believe that gifted education can be a vehicle towards equity.
That's good. And so now I'm going to ask you the opposite side of the coin again from your report, what you learned. Okay. What are the states that need to do better? We're not going to say that they came in last or anything nuts like that. I will throw myself out there. I live in Maine. Okay. Where was Maine? Just off the top of your head, were they one of the better, the worst, whatever? Yes.
New England was one of those areas. New England as a whole, I'll talk to them because there's some common trends throughout New England.
Yep.
Where there is, you know, you might not see as strong of gifted education support as you might say within Oklahoma or within Texas or within Florida or North Carolina. But there's still people like the state organization, not the State Department of Education, but the state advocacy group is very active there and is very strong in trying to promote gifted education. But there's throughout some of the New England states, there's been sort of a pullback of wanting to have less government. And because gifted education kind of falls under that umbrella of government intervention, there's just been a general pullback against it. So that's been, but that's not to say it's drastic. It's in those cases, like say, for example, I'll use Maine's neighbor, New Hampshire.
Yeah.
So right around the corner.
Good. Yep.
New Hampshire isn't necessarily, it's not that gifted education is being targeted or there's this big push against gifted education. There's a push against the Department of Education in New Hampshire. And so gifted ed kind of is like a casualty of that. So there's some issues where there's backswing that's caused not due to being gifted education being targeted, but something that might be at the state that's trying to reform the Department of Education within the state, and gifted ed just happens to be caught up in that.
Mm-hmm. So New Hampshire, and generically, is starting to lose a little ground.
Right.
And they got that's
right.
good. That's a good way to put it. Okay. And let me swing over. Yeah. And let me swing over to William Knutson here, Bill. Okay.
Sure.
You take this information. Okay. And you put it all together in the report. And I want you to tell us, by the way, where the report is. I couldn't find it on your website. I'm sure it's there, but I couldn't find it. Okay. But you're in charge of the affiliate relations, which I assume are the state chapters. Okay. So what happens when you get information like this as the NAGC point man on this?
Sure. I mean, what happens is – no, absolutely. So what happens is we provide it and we work with states to help use the information, and obviously it's contextualized with all 50 states to see where kind of the intersection between what policy advancement we can do in a given state in the political kind of reality. So like in Massachusetts, they just announced a new staffer that would be temporary, but that's a great, you know, advancement because in many states – it's not, you know, there's a correlation between having robust state-level official supporting gifted ed and being strong programs. In New Jersey, they just have new professional development requirements. So to explain to folks with this data that having professional development is correlated with stronger programs, because obviously, you know, you're a stronger teacher if you have more professional learning and development kind of over the course of your career.
Of course.
So that's kind of how we take the data. Depending on the context, both the policy and political context, kind of we, you know, it's state-led but nationally supported, we kind of use it so it's a refresh because you know how it is. It's like anything in life. You don't want to talk about stats from 5 years ago. You want to talk about
right.
the fresh stats that are happening right now because this is really where we live right now, not 5 years ago.
Right, and it's right now, by the way, again, 2021 is the beginning of it. It's a different time. And I just want to clarify something. You said new staffer. You meant new staffer at the Massachusetts Department of Education? Or
yes,
new staffers,
yeah,
of course. Yeah, that's what I thought you meant. Okay, I just
No,
that.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, please.
Yeah,
they got somebody
yeah.
now kind of running things for gifted ed. Is that what you're saying?
Well, they put out a request for a new personnel to temporarily support gifted ed. So it's things like that that when you can show, when you can go into a state and say, look, there's a correlation between having at least one individual that will support educators and parents and students, that you're more likely to get success because it isn't just someone's opinion. You have an empirical basis. So that's what's helpful when we kind of try to push things in Massachusetts, New Jersey. You know, you pick the state that we can look at, states like Texas and Washington State and Florida and Iowa and Kentucky, and say it isn't just an opinion. These are the factors that seem to you know, indicate a stronger gifted program than a weaker one. And this is why for states that need more supports and scaffolding, this is why we need to replicate what other states are doing successfully.
That's right.
You know, two big things are an appropriate staff support and professional development.
And, you know, I love that. And, of course, it's the old line, don't reinvent the wheel. We have 50
yeah,
states,
absolutely.
And each state tries to do this stuff independently. There's no need to do that. When other states are having success, emulate them. Okay, it's that simple.
Yeah.
And education is not—it's not that different. Kids learn the same way in every state. Okay, kids are kids in every state, so we need that. With that in mind, okay. And Jared, I got to swing this one over to you, and I know it's
sure.
part of the report. By the way, where is the report? I mean, I asked you that. Where is the report? Where is it? Can people look at it?
Oh yeah, go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, I'll help Jared out just because it's on the NAGC website. If you NAGC.org, but if you
yep.
look, if you go to the search function and just say State of the States report, so NAGC.org, and then in the search box put State of the States report, it'll pop up. So there's an executive summary, the full report, and you can see everything there.
Okay, great. I see the search box here. It's a nice website. And by the way, there's a whole section on equity and gifted children and all that sort of stuff. But just put State of the State into the search box, NAGC.org. Okay, thank you guys for pointing that out to me. All of this said, and I have to ask this to Jared. I was trained to be a teacher before the word gifted actually existed. Okay, it was so long ago. There were only 30 words in the entire dictionary at that point. Okay. And it was a long time ago, and I'm curious, the word gifted never came up when I was being trained to be a teacher. Are teachers trained to handle gifted kids these days? Yeah, and again, you're a professor at a college of education, and you're an expert in gifted, but how's it settled in with the rest of teacher training?
That's a big depends. That depends on your state and the requirements of the requirements of the licensure program within the university that they're trained in, and requirements of the licensure probably within the state. Like here at University of North Texas, we have not had there are gifted courses, but they're primarily for graduate students as part of a master's level certification
yep.
in giftedness. But we are currently developing courses for undergraduates, and that's because up until last year, Texas did not allow any public university to have a degree for education only. So you could not get a major in education within Texas.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
Yeah, but that's recently changed now. And as part of that change, we're developing courses for gifted education. So
good.
When you ask whether or not their teachers are required to train, at least on the university, like within our network of professors where we kind of talk and chit-chat, a lot of universities might have the courses, but they might be electives for educators, or there might be some kind of certification, like a teacher can be specialized within gifted education.
Mm-hmm.
And the majority that a teacher might have experience with it is if their course on special populations talks about it. And in that case, they might get, a week. But one of the tricky things with kind of assessing the effectiveness of these teacher prep programs or these other issues,
yeah.
our states will have this kind of information about the courses that they offer, how many people are taking them, or even just general education data that sits around there. And then it kind of just sits on like a state server. So when you ask, like, is it available, one of the other questions are these programs also effective as well? And it's kind of hard for us to assess some of the effectiveness of whether it's teacher training or whether it's, like, say, issues in equity, like, say, a new state tries to do an implementative equity policy, when
mm-hmm.
some of the data that all these states kind of collect on these different programs, these different interventions about giftedness, these different trainings kind of just sits there as well. So that's kind of answering a question you asked, plus a little extra,
yeah,
on there
right.
as well.
That's good. And the reason I'm asking is because, we can talk about the gifted, but they need to be taught, if I may, in a certain way, with a different pedagogy, if I may. They're gifted, okay, like any other special group within that kind of a pedagogical group within a school. And my question is, let me boil it down a little differently. Do we have enough teachers that can handle gifted kids? And I'll ask Bill this. Bill, what are you finding? Okay, what's the report about teacher training? Yeah.
The teacher training is a patchwork. So that's one of the things that is valuable about this report that Jared and his colleagues did, is so we can take examples from states that have robust programs and say, look, teacher training is imperative. And there's a vast difference between states that have teacher training specifically enumerated for gifted students and those that don't.
So Jared, can a regular teacher, let's say we identify more and more kids into a gifted program, okay? Who teaches these kids?
Well,
Jared.
There's some push towards having them within the general ed, where the teachers do something called differentiation, where
oh, sure.
a general
yeah.
ed teacher will differentiate curriculum for the student, and for one group of students. They'll get a standard curriculum. For another group, they might get a modified version of that curriculum. That's one thought process of how things can be done. And in that case, differentiation is something that's good for all kids. And so having teachers trained in differentiation to meet the needs of their gifted students and to meet the needs of their special ed kiddos works for all students, because a teacher can then differentiate for all the kids in their classroom. So that's this idea that what's good for the gifted kids is good for all kids. And kind of training teachers to meet the needs of gifted students helps them better be trained to meet the students, to meet all students' needs. So that's one idea behind or one aspect of teacher training that can be pushed.
Is anybody doing it?
I know Texas is trying. That's a big push here in Texas.
That's nice.
That they're trying to,
that's good.
To have. But that's one of the things that the nice thing about differentiation as well is that it's a cheap way. You don't have to necessarily have spend money on expensive curriculums. You don't necessarily have to have differing or additional personnel. So for like a cash strap, like especially rural districts, which might not have a lot of money. So you look at states with large rural populations. You look at your states in, you know, the Northwest, even within
mm-hmm.
New England, some of the areas, like
sure.
you mentioned, Maine.
Oh, sure.
Maine has
sure.
a lot of rural school districts.
They do.
So you look at that, and you have this idea that what's good for, say, a suburban district with a lot of resources, like, say, for example, the suburbs of Dallas-Fort Worth, and you compare them to, say, what should be the teacher training in a rural district, and
mm-hmm.
you can kind of say that maybe things should be approached a little differently, where this rural district is going to play with, you know, the cards that they have, and they're going to use this set of programs. So when you ask, like, issues of teacher training or issues regarding like that, one of the things that I always keep in mind within my research, it depends on the context of where that teacher is at as well. You know, what kind of school that they're at, because what might fit best for large urban school district, like, say, let's see, Miami-Dade Public School
yep.
or down in
yep.
Florida,
sure.
or Broward County, might not fit in the same in a rural upstate Maine, you know, up in the forest up there, you know, of a district that serves those students. So that's one thing also to keep in mind when we think about teacher training, is that it's not always one size fits all. But there are still a lot of things that are good for a lot of kids.
Yeah, there are. And I'm curious about this, which we didn't prepare for necessarily, but I'm curious how this came up. I'll ask Bill, and then you can swing it over to Jared if you want. But, Bill, education technology, okay, broadband, access to great teachers, if we could have the broadband anywhere in the country. I'll use rural Maine as the example, way, way, way up north, okay? If they could have access to a great gifted educator who's down in Kentucky, I'll say, okay, that could make it happen. Was there any talk about using technology and also getting the right technological products in there, okay, and services to help these kids? Was there talk about that in this report?
There wasn't a big focus on it, but you're absolutely right. I mean, having bandwidth and broadband and having the access to great online programming, I mean, Purdue, John Hopkins, I believe UNT, to get those programming and services to kind of our rural communities is vital. But there wasn't really a lot of focus of it in the report. A couple of states proactively mentioned it, but I'll defer to Jared if there were additional things, you know, from the supplementary information that you and your team collected. That might be informative for this question.
Jared.
That's been one of those things that's especially highlighted now during, like, the COVID era.
Oh, yeah.
So
oh, yeah.
How, interestingly enough, like, how much they mentioned technology issues. So we collected the data right before schools started to close and up until right around, I want to say, close to the summer is when we finally got the last date.
Last spring, basically.
Right.
Yeah,
so
spring
right
2020.
School closures.
Yeah.
So depending on how much the state – go ahead.
No, I was saying those are the toughest times. Go ahead, yeah.
Oh, yes. Good. So depending on how much the state might have mentioned technology as an issue, depending on where they are within school closures. Like, prior to school closures, we might not have seen so many states say, you know, it's an issue getting our like, says, rural kids, you know, services. You know, that might not have been on their radar, but that was definitely on some of the states' radar in the midst of closures, where they were trying to give services to students who might not have access to, say, broadband. You know, you say kids in, like, especially some of the rural districts, where that became, or states with a very large rural population, that became a little more highlighted. And even when states that we don't think of rural, like, say, for example, New York, when you think of, like, New York, people tend to think of, like, New York City, and they think, New York is
Yeah, but New York
mega,
has plenty of rural. New York has plenty of
yes,
rural,
it does.
Believe me. Yeah, it
so
sure does.
That's one of the things that the report kind of highlighted as well, is that in the midst of this, we're like, working with New York's DOE, they were facing an issue of how does help districts, like in upstate New York, meet the needs of their gifted students. And it's not in New York City, but that's even within states, you have very vastly different districts and student populations. You have, and within New York, you have New York City Public Schools, which is like, if it was a state unto itself, would have
yeah.
one of the largest school populations, you know, in the
yeah.
U.S.,
right.
if it was
right.
just a state unto itself. And then you have
right.
the rest of, like, upstate New York, which is a lot more rural. So you had a Department of Education that was trying to meet the needs of very urban and suburban areas,
yeah,
and then much more rural areas at the same time. So there's a big focus and look on COVID-19 and the resulting school closures has led a much larger focus on gaps in terms of access to technology,
yep, yes,
within different populations. And some of the states currently rethinking and looking at that gap. And so, again, whether or not a state thought about it was really closely linked or mentioned it to when they were able to respond to the survey. But my guess is some of the early ones, some of the smaller or some of the states with larger rural populations, if we re-ask them again, like, what are your thoughts on this? You know, give us where some other areas of need. I'm almost certain you would see issues of ed tech and access to high-speed internet and would pop up. And some of the things you said, giving students, like, access to
exactly,
like, high-quality,
sure,
education. Yeah, it's a great way to
And, you know, it's interesting. As lousy as this pandemic is, it's absolutely horrible. I don't have to get into that. Okay? But, okay, it brought out a lot of things that oh, my God, we could be doing this. We have to do it. Okay? And we can't make excuses anymore. And it kind of opened that door, and hopefully we'll learn some good lessons on this. We got to go in just a few seconds, gentlemen, but I want to ask you a very simple question. I'll ask Bill first. Bill, you're NAGC, a Government and Affiliate Relations Director. Just in one quick sentence, what is the state of gifted education? Good, bad, right now? What's your feeling? Simple answer.
I think it's good. Simple answer is it's good. You know, we have strong movement, professional learning, development, equity, closing the excellence gaps. Like everything, there's always things to be done. And I just want to mention kind of the importance of this report. One of the things that we're doing is a proof point for advocacy. We have our leadership and advocacy conference March 22nd to 24th. It's virtual.
Thank you for saying that.
And Jared and his folks are going to be kind of leading opening session about this data because it's vital data to support our state advocacy and our federal advocacy. So I want to mention that as well. But there's been a lot of positive work, and there's more work that needs to be done.
Here, here. But we're in good shape per Bill Knutson. And again, check the NAGC, NAGC.org website for the events coming up. Jarrett, Dr. Hodges, what's the state of gifted education right now?
I would say it's good as well. There's a lot more focus on things like equity, you know, where
there
a lot of people are interested in that. There's more people focused on policy, where, like, rather than having states try to figure things out on their own, and, like, you might have Oklahoma, who's doing great things with Native American students and identifying them greatly, kind of keeping all that information to themselves, and then you might have a state like Louisiana trying to figure out on its own, but you're having a lot more states kind of talk with each other, kind of look at what other states are doing. There's more interest in gifted ed in policy work as well, and that's something. So the combination of being interested in policy and being interested in equity and having a lot of people who are passionate about that, so even if you might not have a state Department of Education directly supporting gifted ed, you have people within the state who are very passionate about it, who are very passionate about these subjects and these issues in gifted education, who are kind of leading the charge as well. So that's one of the big positive things where I think gifted education, at least across the U.S., it's pretty good. You know, it's pretty
that's
good
pretty
to be
good.
In gifted education. It's pretty good.
We're good. Okay, the current state, I feel like President Biden, okay, at the State of the Union, the current state of gifted education is good, and everybody cheers. Okay, but we can do better. Okay, it's that simple, and we're going to keep doing better. All right, Dr. Hughes, thank you, okay, from the University of North Texas. Thanks, Jarrett.
Thank you very much.
Well, my pleasure. Are you kidding? Bill Knutson, thank you, my friend.
Thanks, Larry. It's great to be with you again. Take care.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you guys here. Okay, anytime, as you know. Have a good day. Take care of yourselves. Okay? Bye-bye.
You as well.
Bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye. And stay safe in D.C. and stay safe in Texas, everybody. All right, we'll archive the show over at ace-ed.org. It's NAGC.org for more information on gifted. The time is now. Okay, let's keep it going. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, and thanks so much for listening.